Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Our next guest covers the Philadelphia Phillies for MLB.com. He also has written a book about Roy Halladay's life. Recently, ESPN and E60 had a documentary about Roy's tumultuous life, his battle with depression, and his tragic ending in the plane crash. Our next guest spoke to his family members and, I think, again, uncovered pieces of a Hall of Famer's life that we didn't really know about. Joining us here on the show this morning is Todd Zielecki. Todd, good morning. Thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. I want to start with baseball in general, and then we'll get to Roy Halladay. With the return of baseball, do you feel like this 60-game season is going to be fun, exciting, and have that urgency that we don't usually get? Or do you look at it as kind of a hodgepodge, dysfunctional, kind of not completely reasonable way to find a champion this year?
You know, now that it's finally been decided in baseball, workouts are going to be coming back this week, I tend to be leaning toward it could be a lot of fun. And the one thing I use as a kind of a reference point is when the Phillies won the 2008 World Series, Game 5, if you remember, got suspended in the fifth inning because of rain. And they came back and they completed the clinching game. And it was a lot of fun, those final four innings. And so I'm kind of looking at it the same way. Basically, all 30 teams are tied for first place, approaching the traditional July 31st trade deadline. And so I think that has the potential to be fun. I think there's going to be some surprises. There could be some teams that you think are going to stink, that are going to get hot, and are going to make the playoffs. And just like, you know, there might be some teams you're like, these guys are locks to make the playoffs, stumble a little bit. There might be an injury, or maybe somebody gets, you know, a couple players get COVID, knock them out of contention. I think that it has the chance to create a lot of drama.
Now, a lot of people would say that over the last couple of weeks and months, as we've seen these two sides battle over money, that there could be some long-lasting ramifications for this. Do you think that that's true, or was that overreaction because everybody was angry at the time?
I think that's true. You know, I think people, once they get on the field and start getting after it, I think that they will move past it. But very clearly, the CBA is expiring at the end of 2021. There's a lot of bad blood, a lot of mistrust between ownership and the players' union. And I think that's going to continue. I think that's what a lot of this was about. The players kind of got handed to them in the last CBA, and they really do not want to give up another inch to ownership. So they were trying to draw a line in the sand here. And so for that reason, I do think that, you know, this will be a nice respite. You know, hopefully they get to play all 60 games. Hopefully they get to finish the World Series. But then after that, I think it's going to kick up again.
Todd Zielecki joins us for MLB.com. He covered the Phillies. He's also the author of Doc, The Life of Roy Halladay. Maybe you had a better sense of this because you're in Philadelphia. You know the Phillies organization so well. But I don't think a lot of baseball fans at large knew the demons that Roy Halladay had dealt with. And I think they only kind of came to the surface with the E60 documentary that was released a couple of weeks ago. How much did you know before, I think, the world at large knew about all of the tribulations and personal demons that he had been dealing with for a long time?
So his last season with the Phillies was 2013, and you kind of knew something was going on, but you didn't really know. And here's what we kind of saw as beat reporters. We saw a Roy Halladay that was a little bit skinnier, a little bit more frail. You remember how imposing he used to be on the mound, 6'5", like 235, just rock hard muscle. You know, that wasn't there anymore. He would just, first inning, just flush red, dripping with sweat. There were interviews where he spoke really slowly and deliberately, like, you know, something's not right here. He must be medicating in some way, shape, or form. And we asked him and we asked others. His response at the end of that 2013 season is that he was suffering from a genetic illness, and this was medication from the genetic illness. And that's kind of all we knew at the time. Now, obviously, after that and talking to Brandy, she said that was a cover story, and you know, he was addicted to pain medication at the time. And you know, then he battled depression, and everything kind of spiraled from there.
You know, you never want to assume any of these guys have a perfect life, because nobody really does. But we look at athletes, it's kind of indestructible, and we know the type of challenge that they're on physically every single day. So it seems almost impossible to be dealing with addiction and or these types of depressions or substance abuse and still be a world-class athlete. How rare is that for Roy Halladay even to have been active in baseball while dealing with this type of substance abuse?
Yeah, you know, I do wonder how many other players might be going through this stuff. I think certainly the mental health issues, I think there's probably a lot, just like there is in the general population. But for Roy Halladay, what it came down to is he felt a lot of internal pressure. And he felt internal pressure his entire life to make people happy, to perform. And then in 2012, as he was battling a back issue, he was like, I got to go out. I've got to be Roy Halladay. I've got to be the Cy Young candidate. And he was looking for any way to get on the field, pitch well. And he started taking pain medications because he's like, you know, maybe this will numb my back pain. Maybe this can help me do the things I could do in the past. Well, you know, as we know, opioid addiction or opioids are incredibly strong and powerful. And he started taking these things, and he could just not quit the habit. So the fact that he was able to even, you know, finish two more seasons in the big leagues, it was very surprising.
Todd Zielecki, author of Doc, The Life of Roy Halladay, joins us here on the show. He covers the Phillies for MLB.com. Roy had come into the Phillies organization, acquired after they had won that 08 World Series championship. And so the Phillies brass knew, we have this window, we have this great foundation, we've already won a title, we're trying to load up for another one. How much of the pressure that he put on himself was delivering, being the centerpiece of delivering that next championship for the Phillies, which never came?
You know, I don't know if it was so much the team pressure. I think it was always just more individual pressure for him. You know, he knew coming in that expectations were high. It was something actually that he wanted, because he had pitched all those years, 12 seasons in Toronto, and never really got close to the postseason. So he kind of engineered the trade to the Phillies. He had a full no-trade clause. He told Toronto, you got to trade me. You got to trade me either to the Phillies or the Yankees. That's it. Those are the only two places I'm going to. Make it happen. He came to Philly. So I think he didn't feel so much pressure from that. I think it was, again, later in his career, as his body started to break down, he felt like, oh man, I'm making $20 million. You know, fans aren't getting what they paid to see. You know, this organization traded these top prospects for me. I'm not delivering my end of the bargain. And that's the pressure he felt more than anything.
It's super hard to interpret all the family dynamics at play. And you delve into them in the book. E60's documentary Imperfect did as well. But the one thing that I really came away with wondering was how they view his final day, because as you've now laid out, Roy Halladay had dealt with anxiety, depression, pressure, suicidal thoughts, substance abuse. He had gone through all of these check marks, and then he had retired, didn't know how to get that rush back. He took to flying, and his final day, he's dipping and dive bombing over the water and ultimately crashes. And his His widow insists that was not a suicide. When right. he left the house that day, he seemed fine. Through your conversations, what do you feel, and why do you think that they are absolutely committed to not even going there about Roy Halladay?
You know, it's interesting. So I talked with Roy's dad about this, and he did a lot of investigative work on his own about the crash and what might have happened. You know, he's a pilot. That's how Roy got his love of flying, was through his father. And so Roy's dad, again, he talked to airplane experts, you know, all sorts of people to figure it out. And he finally concluded, he's like, you know what? Everything we know, the NTSB reports, the video of the way he was flying, the coroner's report with all the chemicals that were in his system, he's like, everybody can draw their own conclusions. The only person that can tell me what happened was Roy, and obviously Roy's not here anymore. In talking with Brandy for the book, you know, she said, yes, you know, he seemed to be flying erratically. Yes, he had chemicals in his system. She said he was still battling addiction. He had been in rehab twice by that point. So she's like, none of that, the chemicals in the system were not a surprise to me. Why he was flying that way, she's like, I don't know. Obviously, I know how it looks. Obviously, I know what people are going to think. She's like, absolutely, I do not think it was suicide. And honestly, I tend to agree with her, because he was very slowly starting to turn the corner, or turn a corner. He got a job with the Phillies on the minor league side as a mental skills coach. It was a passion of his. And he was coaching his sons as baseball teams. It was a passion of his. Personally, what I think is, you put the NTSB report together with the chemicals in his system, you know, he wasn't flying the way he should have been flying. He probably shouldn't have been flying that day. That's my take on it. I don't think it was, the grimmest of possibilities.
What substances did he have in his system when he was flying that final day?
You know, he had morphine in his system. He had other opioids in his system. He had some drugs for depression and anxiety. He really had quite amphetamines were in his system. He had quite a few things that, you know, if you had it in your system and were pulled over for driving, or, you know, certainly if you'd be in an airplane, you know, you could have been arrested for.
Todd Zielecki joins us, author of Doc, The Life of Roy Halladay, this morning on the show. You open up the book with perhaps his greatest moment, and that's the perfect game in the playoffs against the Reds. Was that as good a pitching performance as he has ever had, or has he had more dominant performances? It just happened that it clicked that day with 27 outs and 27 up, 27 down.
Yeah, you know, I think that no-hitter against the Reds in the postseason was his finest pitching performance. He had come even more so than the perfect game he had in Miami earlier that year in 2010. He was, in talking to people that he was teammates with, people that were on the Reds that day, he was unhittable. His pitches moved like they had never moved before. He could command them. He could control them. He was on his game. And he had prepared more than he had ever prepared for a start. You know, he said after his playing career, he's like, I knew the Reds had no chance. I had 9 days to prepare for my final start that season to that game one against the Reds. He's like, I knew they were not going to be able to out-prepare me. And he said, I was never more confident than I was in that start. And for Roy Halladay, so much of his pitching success was on the mental side of the game. And mentally, he felt like he was going to be unhittable, and he turned out to be unhittable.
Right. His perfect game was earlier in the season against the Marlins. As you said, that game was a one-walk game. He was a no-hitter, but faced 28 batters. I want to ask you about Roy Halladay's arrival at greatness, because this was not always predetermined or predestined. I mean, he struggled coming up through the Blue Jays organization, and he had had some real down moments. What were those about, and how was he able to reclaim being great later in his career?
So he was a first round draft pick. He was heralded as like the next Roger Clemens or Pat Hankin. And he came up with Chris Carpenter, who later had a lot of success, certainly with the Cardinals. And they talked a lot about the pressures that they felt. Well, so Roy was feeling internal pressure again to please people, but he also had this over the top delivery that made him very easily hittable. So in the 2000 season, he had a 10.64 ERA. Wow. And you hear that and you go, that's terrible. It's still to this day, though, the single season highest ERA in baseball history of any pitcher that's ever thrown 50 or more innings in a season. And you hear that and you go, okay, that's obviously terrible. But then you look at the pitchers that are underneath it, and they're all journeymen, one-and-done guys. Hall of Famers are never that bad. You know, they're just never that bad. So he was – they sent him down to A-ball the following year. And he was months away from being a first-round bust. But what happened is he changed his delivery, and then he got introduced to Harvey Dorfman, the famous sports psychologist. He read his book, The Mental ABCs of Pitching, and Roy said later, he's like, I felt like this guy had been following me around my entire life. It's like he could read my thoughts of how I stepped on how I felt when I got on the mound. And it was really the Harvey Dorfman stuff, the mental side of the game, that helped turn him around. It gave him a path towards preparation. It gave him a path towards, okay, something bad just happened to me, mound. How do I get past it? And that was those were the two keys, the changes in the mechanics, but the mental fortitude, a mental guide on how to succeed, that really got him going. And I got into anything that he could say over his career, I tried to put in the book just in terms of, you know, what those keys were to get him going.
He's the author of Doc, The Life of Roy Halladay. The book is available at Amazon and other places that books are sold. Also, MLB.com. He covered the Phillies there. Todd Zielecki joining us this morning on the show. Todd, this is awesome, man. Thanks so much. Let's do it again here coming up when baseball starts again.
That'd be great. Thanks, DA. Appreciate it.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.